Summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there was another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. At IKEA, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, they have all of the essentials that you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I am all in.
More, more, more. I wanna kiss you more.
I am all in with Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, everybody. It's Scott Patterson here with the I Am All In podcast from iHeartRadio. Man, what an episode. Paris is burning. There's a lot more burning than Paris. I would say Max Medina and Lorelai are burning. Emily is burning down at Lorelai. Rory is burning down at Paris and burning her down. And man, burning down Lorelai. It's unbelievable. Listen, guys, I hate to tell you, I told you so, and I warned you about this, but everything that I thought would happen happened. It happened in one episode. I didn't expect it this quickly, but my God, it was like getting in the ring with Mike Tyson and you just keep getting slugged and slugged and slugged. And there it is. I mean, it all just came apart and, it was just a beautiful thing to watch, wasn't it? It was just lovely. I didn't want to be right. It pains me to see this very, and here's the thing about Rory. She is such a strong young woman. That's the thing for me that came through in this episode is her strength. Her strength that she has had to deal with all of this. And especially it's sort of like, you know, you put a cap on at the end when she comes in and cuddles her own mother. I mean, who is the child? Who is the daughter? Who's raising who here? But I really like the way this episode really portrayed a single mother who needs to have a life outside of this because, of course, it's all been set up that, hey, she's, you know, Rory's going off to Harvard or Yale, wherever she's going to go off to. And what about your life? And it was really good dramedy. It was really more drama than comedy, but it was, my God, that was powerful, powerful episode. I knew this was going to happen. It just seemed like perfect setup for something like this to happen, and it all blew up. Boy, did it blow up. And the moment that Paris came by and saw those two, you know, necking in the classroom, boy, I tell you, man. Anyway, we have a very, very special guest. And she's waiting in the waiting room. And let me read a little bit about Mara Wilson, okay? And you know her and you love her. Mara Wilson is known for her childhood roles in Mrs. Doubtfire and Matilda. Mara's first book, Where Am I Now? True Stories of Girlhood and Accidental Fame, is available from Penguin Random House. Mara Wilson will be joining us. Can't wait to talk to her. She is a Gilmore Girls super fan, and we will be back after these messages. Summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices, and vacation disappears quicker than ice cream melts. But what if summer doesn't have to come with a scorching price tag? What if there's another way? With IKEA, your plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Dreamy getaways can mean the perfect reading nook right outside your window, picnic in the shade, or taking your morning coffee to meet the morning sun. Really, any meal tastes better outside. Create that summer escape for family and friends and start planning a better, more affordable summer right now. You can be the host with the most and the least worries. This summer, make your doorstep the perfect vacation destination with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Okay, everybody, we're back. Scott Patterson, I Am All In Podcast, iHeartRadio. We are going to bring in Mara Wilson here, who is a Gilmore Girls super fan and a very successful actress in her own right. And there she is. Hello.
Hello,
Mara. Nice to meet you.
Hi, nice to meet you, too. I am so excited about this.
I am very excited about this, too, after reading your resume and being aware
you.
Of your...
Yeah, my publicist emailed me, and she knows me very well, and she was immediately like, I assume that you're going to want to do this, and I wrote back like, yes, in all caps, immediately. She knows I'm a fan.
Well, we're glad to have you, and you're a Gilmore Girls super fan. What was it that initially captured you? You're a writer... of some note now. So I imagine the writing grabbed you immediately.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm usually very behind the curve on things. And I was kind of on Gilmore Girls too. I didn't start watching it until like the fourth or fifth season. And my brother John was a huge fan of it though. He loved it. And John liked a lot of the like CW, WB, you know, ABC Family, Freeform, Fox Family kind of shows. He liked a lot of them, but Gilmore Girls was always like, it always had a special place in his heart. And I think at that time, I think that I was like, when it first premiered, I think I was like, you know, I was kind of like too much of a tomboy. And I was like, oh, this isn't going to be something I want to watch. It's going to be too girly. Later on, I would realize that I actually love girly stuff. But I started watching it with him when he would like, he was in college at the time, and he would come home and I would watch it with him, and just the witty banter and just the way that everybody talked and how fast it was. And it felt kind of similar to my family, because there was a lot of, in my family, there was a lot of talking over each other and dropping all these references and dropping all these quotes. And so that felt very familiar and it felt very fun. So yeah, I think it really was the dialogue. Mm-hmm. I think, and writing dialogue is one of my favorite things ever, probably because I grew up on film sets and I spent a lot of time listening to adults talk. So good dialogue really gets to me. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it. So that is something that I think is very important to me and something that I gravitated to right away.
So many great characters. So difficult for a writer, yes, to create so many distinct, unique voices in one cast. Amazing.
Yeah, there's so many. It's so interesting because the rhythm is all very similar, I think, but everybody has such a distinct voice, and there really isn't like a weak link in any of the characters. Like you love all the characters, even the ones that you hate, you kind of love, because they're just so fully formed and they're so fascinating and they're so interesting in their own way. So I immediately, you know, when I started watching it, I was like, oh, this is really good. And I don't know what I was expecting, but I also love dramedies. I think that kind of, and I write, like the stuff I write tends to be kind of dramedy-esque. I think that there really isn't such a thing in life as like a truly comedic or truly dramatic moment. There's like a seed of, you know, you find the comedy in the sad, and there's always a bit of tragic in the comedic. So I think dramedies are like the sweet spot. They're very true to life.
Right, right. Let's break down the episode a little bit. So you watched, yes, you watched the episode?
Yes, I did. I did. And you know, the previous two episodes, I think, are like some of the best episodes, I think. So I watched those. I went back and I went to watch it and I was like, okay, but I need to go back and watch these two first because I love these. And my sister was like, can we just watch Gilmore Girls from the beginning again? And we might end up doing that. And she was hesitant to get into it too, but as soon as she got into it, she was like, oh, this is the best show. I love it. And so it's something that means a lot to both of us. But I think that, that this character, it's interesting. This one episode it focuses on one of my favorite Gilmore Girls characters and one of my least favorite Gilmore Girls characters.
Who are they?
I don't like Max Modena.
And in the right podcast.
Yes. Okay. Because he suffers from a terminal case of not being Luke. I am Luke and Lorelai all the way. But also for a long time, because I've seen Scott Cohen on other shows and I've loved, mm-hmm, him on them. I loved him on The Americans. And so I was like, well, I know it's not the actor. He's a great actor and the writing is good. So what is it? And then I thought, oh my gosh, he reminds me of my 9th grade English teacher, who was always kind of, this was a guy who loved to talk about like how nice and kind and emotional and enlightened he was, but he was actually just kind of a big jerk. and he really didn't like me. And I really loved his class, but he really didn't like me. And I'm like, oh, he gives me big Mr. H feelings. He reminds me of him.
Why didn't he like you?
I was like going through a tough time, which honestly, like everybody is when they're 14, but you know, like things, there were a lot of big changes in my life and I was kind of struggling with my identity. And I was a bit like Lorelai. I was loud and I was obnoxious and I was always talking over everybody. And I would blurt things out in class and I would embarrass myself and I would embarrass my friends. And I think that I was just too intense for him. Right. And he didn't like that. And so I remember he kicked me out of his class once, because I'd been talking out of turn like too much. And he told me, he said, has anybody ever told you that you rub them the wrong way?
Wow.
And I was like, what a thing to say. Especially when it's coming from somebody who's like all about psychology and all about Freud and will be like, tell me about your parents and tell me about your life. And like being insulted by like a sensitive ostensibly gentle person is like the worst thing that can happen. And I had a bit of Luke in me too. I was also kind of grumpy. So I think that kind of put him off, and you know, that puts some people off. So Max reminds me of him, but also he's just not Luke. So it's just like, you know, you watch these episodes and Luke is like a part of them, and then here's not Luke again. So that I think was part of it. And, but Paris is one of my favorite characters. She is so entertaining. So I loved the Paris moments in this one.
Plenty of them.
Yes. Good Lord. Yes.
What a mean girl. But, you know, and I know how they try to justify it through the divorce, the horrible divorce.
Exactly.
And the father has a family in Paris, a second family in Paris.
Yes, yes.
You know, I think some very famous people had second families in Paris. Buck Fuller, I think, had another family. There was, you know, a lot of writers had second families. I mean, it seems to be a theme amongst tortured creative souls.
They all had like their wives and their mistresses, right. And and a lot of them were in Paris. Right. And I think that was kind of more that was seen as like even more acceptable. Like here, you know, they would shame you for that, I feel like. Mm-hmm. But in France, you know, that was seen as acceptable. I've also heard that amongst like the royal family and aristocratic people, it's considered kind of cool if your like partner is having an affair with somebody who's like more aristocratic or more royal. Mm-hmm. Like some people said, like about Camilla Parker Bowles, like her husband was like, well, she's sleeping with the prince and that's cool because he's so high status. So, but things are very different in the US. But I love Paris, and I just love seeing, and I mean, this is one of the few times that you see her mom, and you kind of get the feeling that Paris was actually raised by her nanny, mm-hmm. you know, and she is very lonely. And I think people who are kind of born into chaos, they tend to maybe not thrive in chaos, but they're used to chaos, and they kind of create chaos around them, mm-hmm. because that's what they're used to. And that allows them to kind of have the upper hand. So one of my favorite lines in this show ever, I think, is in a later season when Rory and Paris are getting along and Emily says, now there's Paris. Are you two friends? I never can tell. So
I saw a little bit of Emily and Paris's mother.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. And there's a lot of, oh my gosh, going to quote the show. There's a lot of Emily in Paris. They definitely, and they understand each other. I think when they get together, they kind of understand each other. And Emily sometimes finds her, I think, a little annoying, but I think it's that thing where you can see in other people what you don't like in yourself. You know, mm-hmm. it's like looking in a mirror. And I think that that's kind of what it is.
You know what I found really interesting about Emily scene with Lorelai when they come over for dinner and she wants to confront her about the kissing with Max Medina? She was incredibly restrained. She ramps it up. You know something big is happening, but she doesn't abuse the scene. As an actress, she doesn't abuse that scene. She really plays the exasperation beautifully. Like, I just don't understand you. Are you insane? Please explain this to me. And gives her a chance to explain. And she listens. She does listen.
I think you're right. Kelly Bishop is great with that. She's very great with restrained, mm-hmm. restrained emotion and restrained scenes. And that's something I feel like you can see in a lot of her performances. You know, you can see that in Dirty Dancing too, where she always has a look on her face like she wants to say something, but she won't. Mm-hmm. You know, she wants to do something, but she won't. And you can hear that on, you know, the Chorus Line cast album, just talking about her family and things. So she, I think she, as an actress, is kind of a master of restraint, and she wants to do these things, but she doesn't. But I think the difference between her and Lorelai is Emily sees all these restrictions in place as an important thing. And they are the way that things are, and you have to live by them. And Lorelai just hasn't. She hasn't ever seen that. Mm-hmm. She's never understood, why do we need to do this? She's never understood the why of it. And Emily is like, there isn't a why, you just do. There's so much. And I don't know, it's such a great restrained scene, I think. And I don't know, you see one thing that's really nice about this episode is you see these two, you see Paris kind of having to admit that she did something wrong. And you also see, you see Rory and Lorelai relating, but you see Rory having to take care of Lorelai, I think, at the end of this episode, mm-hmm. which is really interesting. And I think that this early in the show, that's kind of the first time you see this. It's the first time you see Paris sort of admit to a fault, to a flaw, and be vulnerable. And it's one of the first times you see that. And you know that Rory sometimes takes care of Lorelai, but it's one of the first times you actually see it.
What really shined through for me was Rory's strength, her yeah. real being able to stand up to Paris in such a cool yeah. manner, and being able to stand up to her own mother.
Yeah.
And bargaining at the table with her, says, "Well, I'm not returning the book, and screw you, and I'm going into my room. You do it yourself," you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a tough kid.
She is a tough kid. And it, you know, I think that as she gets a little bit older, she loses her way a little bit. She gets more anxious about herself, and she second guesses. But at this age, she has that. And I don't know. And I feel like I had a little bit of that. I think a lot of people do. And I've actually seen interviews with like Liza Wiles, where she said, "Yeah, when I was young, I was very outgoing and believed in myself. And then as I got older, I got shyer." And I feel like Rory kind of does that as a character too. But she's so strong, and it's not just taking care of her mother, but it's also her standing up for herself. She's a very strong sense of self at this age, which is really remarkable. And Lorelai did too. Lorelai knew who she was. She probably did some things that, you know, changed her life, and she did some things. I'm not going to say made a mistake, because Rory is like a wonderful child, and she always says like, "Look, I didn't really make a mistake. This is something that, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done, but I'm not sorry that it happened." But I think that she, I don't know. She also has a very strong sense of self. So this whole episode, I think, and like, yeah, so maybe I do like this episode more than I thought, because it is all about sort of having to come to terms with who you are and your identity, especially with the idea of Lorelai letting Max into her life and how resistant she is to that.
You know, I seeing how Rory turned out in the revival, that mm-hmm. she was doubting herself, second guessing herself, not really her life not working out. Do you think those seeds were planted in this series right away?
I don't know about right away, but I mean, in some ways, I also think that's a generational thing, because yeah. I do know that a lot of, you know,
because what an extraordinarily precocious beginning she had, and yeah, all through China, and now she's in this fancy private school. She's going to Harvard or Yale. And what happened?
I mean, I think a lot of kids, you know, a lot of kids, like when they're told that they're gifted when they're young, or when they're told that they're talented when they're young. And I've experienced a bit of this myself, because, you know, I was sort of, I started acting as a child, and I was kind of, it's a smaller pond back then. And as I got older, you know, there were fewer and fewer roles. And part of it was just, well, there was more competition. But, and also it's harder to be an actor. I think for me, it was almost easier to be an actor when I was younger, because children aren't afraid to be vulnerable, whereas adults learn to be afraid to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that, you know, but I do also think that it's a sort of generational thing. I'm not sure what it was exactly, but I do feel like most people I know, like in their mid-30s, are very unsure of themselves. And I don't know if it's the world that we grew up in, or if it's the way, you know, but I do feel like Rory is, Rory is kind of what we're like.
Here's a 16-year-old girl who obviously is academically gifted. She is yeah. psychologically prepared to deal with yeah. somebody in such a cool manner as Paris. Who would have the wherewithal and the psychological power and the yeah. skills to deal with a Paris at 16 yeah. years old? You have to be a very smart, very cool character with a ton of experience dealing with this kind of thing, and what she got from, you know, dealing with
it
her
makes
own
me
mother.
Wonder.
It's like, how yeah. did she go wrong? How did it go bad? How did she not, I'm not saying it went bad. I'm just, how did she yeah. get lost?
You know, it's interesting. I feel like maybe because Rory is very interpersonally smart, and I think that she's smarter with other people than she is with herself. And it makes me wonder, like, if she had like become somebody who helps other people, if she had focused on that, you know, if she had studied psychology or something instead of journalism and kind of like wanting to be a star, I feel like, you know, maybe that would have changed her. Mm-hmm. That would have, you know, that would have been it. I also think that there were some men in her life who kind of steered her wrong, mm-hmm. which, you know, and I have my opinions on this too. And I will admit, I used to hate Jess. I used to really hate him. I was like, "You're so mean to Luke. You're so mean to Lorelai. You jerk Rory around." And I liked Dean at the beginning.
Yeah,
you
me
know,
too.
Yeah, I liked Dean.
I hated him, and then I liked him.
Exactly. I think one of the first episodes I watched in full actually was the Bop It episode. And I remember being like, why is Luke so mean to him? And my brother was like, you have to go back and watch and find out the sort of ups and downs that happened there. And then I was like, oh, okay, that is reasonable for him to hate him. And Luke is protective. But I felt like Jess kind of came off the best in the, in the revival. I thought that he came off the best because he has found himself and he's not as angry anymore. And Dean is very sweet, but Dean is very much, I think a lot of us have like that first boyfriend or that first girlfriend that, you know, meant a lot to us and really showed us a lot of things. And we learned a lot from them but we're glad we're not with them now. I know that I do where I'm like, that was a lot of fun and that was a great time. And we both learned a lot about ourselves, but we wouldn't have been happy if we got married. You know, we wouldn't have been happy if we decided to stay partners. And I think that that's kind of what Dean is. And it's nice to see that he and Rory are still friendly. Logan is the type of guy, I think, where, and these people are dangerous. When you're around them, you feel really good and they're very charismatic and you get kind of sucked in. And then when you're not around them, you're like, that person's kind of weird. I don't know if I should really be friends with them. That's the feeling that I get from Logan.
Me too.
Very, very charming, but also when you're not around them, you're like, huh, I have kind of a weird feeling in my stomach. Like, should I trust this person?
I didn't trust him the minute he called her Ace.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah,
okay,
exactly.
That's not good. That's not going to work. Her name is Rory.
I felt, you know, and I've definitely had, you know, friendships and relationships with people where they're very charming and they come up with little nicknames for you and they say funny things to you and it's so much fun. And then when you're not with them, you are constantly defending them to other people.
It's a control thing.
It really is. Yeah, it is. And it's kind of scary, actually.
It's a little strange.
So
I agree with
you. I didn't like when he appeared in the revival. I was like, shut up, Logan, go away. Yeah.
Posing in the bed.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. The character. Great. I mean, look, we're talking about the characters here. We're not talking about the people. We love the people.
Well, the actor that plays him, is it Matt Zuccari?
Yeah.
Matt Zuccari. Yeah. I saw him on the street like 10 years ago, walking down the street. And I also saw Danny Strong walking down the street, I think like in that same neighborhood. And afterwards, I was like, is this like a Gilmore Girls neighborhood? But I saw him walking down the street and he looked very handsome and nice. And I remember thinking like, oh man, I feel so bad that I hate this guy's character. He seems like a nice guy.
He is. Testament to his acting skills. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to walk that razor's edge.
And I've also loved Milo Ventimiglia and everything that I've seen him in. And, but Jess, I struggled with, but don't ever say that to a Jess fan because Jess fans are hardcore.
They'll cut your head off.
I think I also was probably too old for Jess. Like, I think if I had seen him if I had started watching the show when it first came out, you know, when I was 13, 14, I think that I probably would have loved Jess. But by 18, I had, by 17, 18, when I started watching it, I had been in an arts high school and I knew a lot of guys like Jess and I had dated them and I was done with them.
Right.
You know, I was just like, you like poetry. Maybe you have a guitar. Like, I don't care. I was just like, I was so over it. But yeah, I was just like, you know,
that was me
oh, look
in high
at
school.
You.
That was me.
Was
the
it?
Poetry and the guitar. Yeah, I couldn't. Oh, that's funny.
That's great. That's great. Funny. So I was like, you had all that and you played baseball too, man. Like,
I quit. I played through my sophomore year and I was so annoyed by the coach. I wasn't like a jock guy.
Yeah.
I loved playing. I was very good at it, but I just didn't want to be that person that the coach wanted me to be. So That makes sense.
And baseball players and baseball coaches can be so hard.
It's, you know, when you're in a discipline where, you know, your body is your instrument, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's like acting. As we break down this episode, as we talk about this episode a little bit, where do you think it's going? Where do you think, I mean, I can't even, here's what I like. Here's when I started liking Max. I liked the way Max suffered I like the way Max faced his consequences. I like the way Max said, we need to take some time apart. This was devastating for him. He almost lost the woman of his dreams, and he almost lost his livelihood, and he still might lose his livelihood. And as I stated earlier in the podcast, this relationship between these two is going to could potentially cost him everything, and the school could be liable, and it's just a giant mess. And what is going on, and why is she doing this? Can you justify this on any level? Can you explain this to my dumb head? Why anybody would do something like this and put their child at this much risk in the middle of this much of a maelstrom?
I feel like, and it's weird because honestly, I feel like if it were like a public school, that happens, you know, like, you know, where teachers and, you know, parents and teachers, they date like that. I've seen that happen. People married, you know, somebody married the coach or the this or the that, but at some place like Chilton, I feel like there's this sort of, and I don't know if it's a class-based thing or what, because while I was watching this at first, I was like, what's the big deal? Like, okay, yeah, they shouldn't have been making out in school. You know, it could influence their grades. And also it's a class thing. I think there's definitely like, you guys kind of can't mix. And for them, it's probably a bit like a doctor dating a patient, which, you know, which really is like unethical. I mean, it's not like a teacher dating a student, which is, you know, unethical and illegal, but although that happens too. But I also think sometimes people are very good for each other, but it's just not the right time. Mm-hmm. It's just not the right place. They're kind of star-crossed. But the thing is that I personally believe, and I don't know if this is just because I'm a Luke and Lorelai kind of person, and I think that like there was something that just wasn't right with it. And I feel like you can see it with Lorelai. She keeps talking about what a good guy he is. She keeps talking about, you know, she's like, he's a good guy, but, and I think that maybe she's even using Rory as an excuse. I think, and this has happened to me too, where you meet somebody and they're really wonderful and they're everything you want on paper, but there's just not the comfort and the connection that you can like see with her and Luke in the previous episode where they understand each other. And that's the thing too, like how comfortable Rory is with Luke is one thing, as opposed to Rory being announcing, you know, I'm comfortable with Max. I'm totally comfortable with Max. You know, it's if you really do feel that kind of comfort, I think you don't really need to say it. And I feel like that. So I feel like that is different. Mm-hmm. You know, that is something different. But then I'm also a big fan of stories where people are like best friends and they go on to get married. And I've also seen that happen in real life. It happened to a family member of mine and it's very cute when that happens. So I like that narrative, I think, a little bit more than like, this person is perfect on paper, but you know, or we can't be together because of, you know, class reasons or job reasons or something like that. I like the best friend slowly realizing they're in love, you know, because there that comes with a foundation of trust, I think, mm-hmm. as opposed to just kind of liking what the other person stands for.
Let me ask you this. And this just popped mm-hmm. into my head. Do you think that there's a part of Lorelai, there's something inside her that longs to go back to Hartford, longs to go back to the country club, longs to go back and be accepted by her family and live that life? Do you think that she has any, even a tinge of regret at what she did at 16, what happened to her at 16?
That's a really good question.
And maybe that's why she's sabotaging the Max thing, knowing full well it's not going to work out, because of course it's not going to work out. And maybe that's why there is this sort of undercurrent of, I don't know, sort of a superiority. There's
bridges.
A sort of a hostile superiority. I don't want to mislead our listeners. I'm not saying that she's hostile toward Luke, but she does have this kind of way of, I don't know, joking with him that's a little too familiar sometimes, and that she hates herself for loving Luke and doesn't want to admit it because he's too low down on the class side for her.
Yeah. Well, that's something you see because Emily, I feel like, you know, and you were talking about this in the last podcast episode, Emily, I feel like she does like Luke, but I think she feels like she can't like Luke. Right. And that becomes a source of conflict later on. She can't like him. But I think that, I don't know, I don't think that she wants to go back to it necessarily, but I do think that she realizes in some ways that she is dependent upon it. in some ways, you know, and that's really the struggle for her, is sort of, and that, you know, and that can be kind of, that is something for a lot of people who come from a privileged background, but don't, you know, people who like people who are very against how, you know, their families made their money. Maybe their families made their money doing something unethical, but they're, you know, the kind of like mezzo soprano kind of thing, where it's like, I don't like where this money is coming from, but I need it so I can go on to become a lawyer, become a doctor, become whatever it is I want to do. She does sometimes, she needs that money. And especially for Rory, I think. And I think, I don't know. I think in some ways she does want Rory to live that life. You know, she struggles. She doesn't want her to be a debutante. She doesn't want her to be doing all those things. But I do think that she wants Rory to still have those advantages. She wants her to go to Harvard. And she knows that she's going to need that connection. So I don't know if it's a want so much as a need. I think subconsciously she knows that she needs
She's living vicariously through her. What she should have happened with her.
Yeah, I think so. I do think that she does. And that's one of the struggles, I think, in the show too, is, you know, her kind of, and I think that she knows that she, in some ways that she's living vicariously through Rory. And I think that's one of Lorelai's biggest internal struggles, mm-hmm. is trying not to do that, mm-hmm. so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trying to be a mom. Wow.
Which is, you know, which is something I understood, because my mother had been an actor, and then she, you know, later on, I when I started acting as a child, my mom struggled every day to not be seen as a stage mother, because she was terrified. She was like, I know somebody's going to be like, oh, you majored, you know, you were a Northwestern theater major and your daughter's an actress. Are you living vicariously through her? You know, so that's something that I recognize, I think. I don't know, you know, I don't know. I do think that she probably needs it. She knows that she needs it.
Mm-hmm. Rory, very strong kid. Very strong kid. Wow. And isn't it, it's interesting how all of these people's home lives are playing out in dialogue, and that the writing is paying attention to this and how much it influences all these interactions at Chilton with these kids, because it's really just all about what's going on at home.
I've always said, because I really like, it's so funny, because if you read like the first play that I wrote when I was in college and like in graduating college, it was called Sheeple, and you can see the Gilmore Girls influence there, because the way that references are dropped and the way people are talking over each other and the way that people are doing these things. I remember my playwriting teacher is even saying in like my progress report, she's like, I know we tease you a lot about all your references, but, and it was true. It was just, but that was really, so it was a really big influence. But I've learned, I think, because I saw a lot of plays when I was living in New York, and I would see some where there would be really clever dialogue, but it wasn't good dialogue. It didn't reveal anything about these people. Like, I feel this way a little bit about like Cole Porter songs. Like all Cole Porter songs are incredibly clever and funny, but very rarely do they reveal anything about a character the way that like a Sondheim song does, or even a Rodgers and Hammerstein song, or a Rodgers and Hart song does. I'm a big musical theater nerd. Mm-hmm. So, so that's the kind of thing, or like a lot of jazz songs do, you know, So I think that that's, and it's okay if your writing is just clever, you know, but Gilmore Girls, I think is a level of writing where everything reveals a character, and everything, you know, another one of my favorite lines is when Lorelai's like, you shouldn't assume, because when you assume, and she's going to say, you make an ass out of you and me, but then she realizes she can't tell that joke to Emily. So she's just like, because you just shouldn't. And she holds back. And that's a thing too, is that so much with dialogue. And I think you see this with Luke, and you see this later on with Jess. There's also what you're not saying. So that's another thing. It's something that you're not saying. And I mean, the witty banter, I love it. It's like popcorn to me, but you know, you have to be, you, I don't know. There's so much that's revealed in it. And that's really what I love about this show. Mm-hmm.
What is your, I'm going to ask you a question that was given to me by a fan, if that's okay.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Who's your favorite character? Who you relate to the most?
Oh, okay. Let's see. I I don't know really who my favorite character is. I think I love Lane. Lane is great. I love Luke. But there's a, I don't know. I really love Paris. I think Paris is like one of my favorite characters. But I feel like a lot of my favorite characters and things are really like the most earnest ones. You know, I think the most earnest ones are always the funniest. And sometimes it's characters who are very earnest and sweet and open, you know. But sometimes it's earnest characters who are a bit too harsh. and I think Paris is kind of one of those. Paris can't be anything other than who she is. And that's really why I love her. I kind of have like a love-hate relationship with Emily because I hate the way she upholds these like archaic things, you know, but I also love who she is as a person, and I love the way that she loves Rory. So, you know, so that's really a thing. Suki too. Suki is another earnest character that I really love. I do love the earnest characters, and Melissa McCarthy is also a genius.
Absolutely.
So, I loved seeing her in this, and then, you know, 10 years later, seeing her in Bridesmaids and Can You Ever Forgive Me and all of these things. And I'm just like, gosh, she can do anything.
Anything. Isn't it amazing? It took
she really can.
Isn't it amazing that Hollywood took this long to discover her when she was doing that work 21 years ago? She was doing that level of work 21 years ago, and nobody cast her in a film.
Yeah.
And gave her a shot. Isn't that wild?
And she does, and she can, she can do everything. So I absolutely adore her. I love Lauren Graham as Lorelai. I think and I also love Edward Harriman as like when he died, I think I actually said out loud, "Oh no, Grandpa died." Like he felt kind of like everybody's grandpa. So I can't really choose. I can't really choose. Who do I relate to? I don't think I relate to Rory that much because I felt growing up like I was kind of a screw up. Like I was more, I think that I, and that's probably not true, but I was always told you have so much potential. Why are you wasting it? And I think that's because I was a very scatterbrained child. In college, they told me, you know, you have ADHD. That's why you're late to things. That's why you lose things, you know? So maybe that was what it was. And I was very anxious. I was always nervous. I was always anxious about it. So I think there's a little bit of Lorelai. I think that I also can do sort of the gruff but loving thing. I definitely have a grumpy side. So I think that there is, especially as I get older, I relate to Luke more and more. And I'm also very pragmatic. And I think Luke is too, you know? Whereas Lorelai, I think, is like more whimsical. So I don't know. Maybe I'm like the child they would have had. wow. Yeah. Because I think I have kind of both the passionate aspect of me and the loud talkative thing. I'm not a coffee drinker. I'm a tea drinker. But I do also have a little bit of Luke's practicality and gruffness and not gruffness, but grumpiness and complains. Like I have both sides in me, I think.
A wide array of character personalities to choose from. We can pick little pieces out of all of them. And
it's
an amazing array. It really is. Another fan question. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get into this. Well, I think you've already expressed how you
feel. I probably have. I tend to ramble.
No. How you've expressed how you feel about Max Medina. I have been very clear about how I feel about Max Medina, even though we love Scott Cohen. What is your favorite Kirk McOdd job?
Oh my gosh. I love when he plays Jesus. And he's so rude to Judas in the Festival of Living Art.
That was his favorite character to play, by the way. He came on the podcast and said he favored Jesus over everybody.
I love Sean Gunn. Yeah, I love Sean Gunn in this. One of the first episodes I watched is the one where he's the projectionist and they're trying to show Cool Hand Luke, but they can't. Right. I love him as the DJ at is it at Liz's wedding? Yeah, where he's just playing like Kaja Gugu and like Wang Chung and just like all the terrible 80s one hit wonders. Yeah. I love that too. I think that's those are probably my favorites.
Right. Let me see, what haven't we covered in the episode?
Who is your favorite character, do you think?
Right now? Emily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Emily and Rory. Emily and Rory.
I don't know. I think that as I get older, I sort of relate to Emily a little bit more. I mean, I think that she kind of, when you grow up in that kind of culture, I think you also, there's a limit to how much free will you have. I also think that Lorelai probably takes after her father a little bit more, because her father is somebody who takes risks and mm-hmm. does big things. Mm-hmm. Whereas Emily isn't. Emily's like, nope, there's a code and I have to live by it. So that I think is something, you know, maybe that's where Lorelai's, you know, impulsiveness and creativity comes from.
Emily has a huge responsibility in her whole life. She still does. She's a corporate wife. I mean, yeah. He's what is he? Yeah. He's a VP at a huge insurance company. I mean, this guy is, you know.
Yeah, he does so much. That's a big deal. I think I also love, and maybe it's because I love Kelly Bishop, but I do feel like when I was younger, I think I was like Emily's so mean, but now I'm like, now I understand her more. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
I have a question for both of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so it's a two-parter. Was Lorelai doing the right thing for herself, for Rory, for whoever, when she was sort of pulling back from Max and not returning his calls? And then they have the incident in the schoolroom where she's sort of trying to break up with him by giving him back the book. That's part one. Was she doing the right thing? Part two, did Max do the right thing in the coffee shop at the end of the episode by telling her they need to take a break? Because that was heartbreaking for me after she's now endured all this embarrassment and he breaks up with her. It's like, oh my God. So I'd love to hear both of you talk about both those sort of those moments.
I think she might have been doing the right thing, but she didn't go about it the right way. You know, you have to be honest with somebody, and she just kind of wasn't. I think she wasn't as upfront about it as she could have been. You know, she wasn't as honest as she could have been. And I understand that why she wasn't, because that's a hard thing to do. That's a hard thing to tackle. I do think Max did the right thing, but I don't know. And I guess it's because I know where it's going, but I do think that, I don't know, like in my experience, anytime somebody says, and then my friend's experience, anytime somebody says we need to take a break, that means they are breaking up for good.
It's over.
But I think that, I don't know. I wonder if she thinks maybe they will get back together or they won't. Like, and maybe he does need some time. Sometimes people do need time, but when they say, I don't know, there's something about, you know, when they say a break that it's not, it's not working. So I don't know, but also in some ways I'm like, who cares? You know, just see where it goes.
She chose him because she knew it wouldn't work out. She did it subconsciously. She knew that it was going to cause problems. Yeah. She knew she would always have an out. She would have several people chewing her face off, her mother first and foremost, her daughter. I mean, she did it to sabotage. She did it to get out of it. And yes, I think Max did the right thing. I really do. I think Max, look, relationships in the beginning, the first flush, which is what they were still in the midst of, are very delicate things, and they can, I mean, you pop the balloon like that. Ooh, that's tough to come back from that. I mean, he was deflated, no pun intended, like a popped balloon. And, you know, he had put so much effort into it. So I really gained a tremendous amount of respect for him as a man who had made a horrible decision. But now I see how overwhelmed he was with his adoration of Lorelai. And he wanted it all. He wanted a family. He wanted kids. I mean, that was it. That's, he had the blinders on, and she burst the bubble and he's gone. He's like, gosh, you know, it was supposed to be perfect. This wasn't supposed to happen. And so now he's questioning his own judgment. So it's just a double negative for him. And of course he has to retreat and sort his feelings out.
Now I have two follow-ups.
Yeah.
Now I have two follow-ups, because you guys are making me think. So my first question is, and I'd love for both of you to analyze it, because you both sort of have suggested you don't like Max, where I love Max. I like him more now.
Yeah, I think I do like him. I do like him more, but in some ways it's just that he isn't Luke. You know, fair, I do know fair. That. I'm totally biased fair. In that way.
So in the yes. scene where Lorelai and Max are on like the cute date, they're at Max's house and they've obviously had like this cute dinner that he cooked and they're like making out. Do you feel the chemistry between them? Do you think they're a good couple if you're just isolating that date?
I feel it from him. I feel it from
Scott,
him.
Scott, I think we just made the same face. We just made the same kind of face.
I mean, I commented on this earlier when he, you know, tried to put her up against the wall and be passionate. I'm like, that's not passion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not at a level of a Luke and Lorelai, because that's,
I don't know. Maybe like Luke is a passionate person who has to try not to be passionate, I think, who hides it behind this sort of gruffness.
Right.
And I think that that's true of a lot of people who've, you know, especially people who've experienced a lot in their lives or who had, you know, Luke has this whole thing with his dad and his sister. Like he, you have to hide that sensitivity and that passion behind, but behind sort of this layer of, if not cynicism, but like toughness. Whereas Max, I feel like is kind of a hard on his sleeve kind of guy, but he's not super passionate. Max isn't a very passionate person, and Lorelai is.
Then I need to know what you guys saw of this because I love Max. So I come from a place of like, he's doing this great, except I do think he had one major misstep. Although I felt his pain, which is why he did it. What did you guys think when he talks to Rory to find out, is she coming to parents' night and she hasn't called me? That I was like,
that for me just demonstrated how enamored he is of her. I mean, he cannot control himself.
He puts her up on a pedestal, yeah. I think.
Oh.
And that is dangerous. Mm-hmm. You can't put someone up on a pedestal. They'll immediately fall or maybe they never will, but they will start to feel uncomfortable with it.
And she sure did.
Yeah, and she did. And she did. So I think that is something, yeah, Max gets kind of helpless around her. And I think that's not good. I think that a lot of people see that as love, but I don't think that it is. I think it's sort of... I think love needs to be more mutual and on the same level.
I think he knows how to love. I think he's a loving guy. I now get him.
Yeah, I think he is too.
I think she needs to create conflict in every relationship she has, or she gets bored, or that's just what she used to.
You may be right there.
I felt more love when you were in the diner and said, drink your hot chocolate, you lock up, we're going, let's go to the hospital. To me, that was love.
Yeah, I think Max knows how to love too. I just think that ultimately it is a like on paper situation. He should be everything that she wants, you know, but she isn't. And yeah, Lorelai may be a little bit immature at this age and still thinking like that she wants something, you know, big. And I mean, she went for Christopher, and Christopher is, you know, hectic and all over the place and inconsistent. So we know that she likes a little bit of that because that is exciting to her. I think that she also matures. She also grows up a little bit in this.
You can't blame her. But you can't blame her for wanting to have, dip her toe in the water. She hasn't been in a relationship for a while.
It's true.
Why can't she have it? But my God, I just think Max was just sort of a test balloon or training wheels for Luke to be able to ride the Luke bicycle.
I could see that. I think that he was great on paper. Right. I think that he was I think that he was great on paper, but ultimately not what she wanted. And I think that with her and Luke, they are on equal footing. And they kind of respect each other. They do respect each other, and they trust each other, and on some level understand each other. And they understand there's an acceptance of who the other person is. There's an understanding and acceptance of who the other person is. You don't have that really with Max and Lorelai, because Max is putting Lorelai up on a pedestal and he's giving a lot, and he's giving more than she's comfortable with, I think. And she really likes him and really likes who he is, but maybe doesn't particularly want it. So you don't have the same the same thing that you have in the Luke and Lorelai relationship.
Totally agree. I just think Max is, he's a mature, psychologically orientated human being. He's a challenge intellectually for her because he's on the same level. And he's probably more schooled, better read. Obviously, you know, she went through her whole Michael Crichton thing. It was a funny bit versus Proust. And I think she wasn't up to the challenge, so she sabotaged it. And she chose him because she knew she wasn't going to be able to swim in those deep waters. Because those are deep waters Max swimming in. That's the real deal. That's a man in love laying his cards on the table. And if it's mutual, it shouldn't be tough. And it became not mutual. So anyway, very interesting. All right. Mara, are you ready for rapid fire?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to do rapid fire. And here we go. Ready? Countdown, ladies and gentlemen. 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1. How do you take your coffee? You don't drink coffee.
Not at all. I drink tea. When I do drink coffee, it is decaf espresso.
Okay. Can you smell snow?
I can smell a lot of weird things. So yeah, I can actually.
Okay. You've already answered this, but I'll ask it anyway. Are you team Logan, Jess, or Dean?
Jess when he's a grown up, Dean when she's young, not Logan.
I'll ask this question. Who's the daddy?
Oh, what does that mean exactly? Just
who knocked up Rory?
Unfortunately, I think it's Logan. Unfortunately. I was like, oh no, not Logan. Please don't be Logan. But I think it probably is, unfortunately.
Yeah. Netflix has him all over there, you know, like with the Gilmore ad. They've got Roy and Logan together. It's like, best memory of Gilmore Girls.
I don't know, probably watching it with my brother and us talking about the strummy La La music.
Sam Phillips. Show you're binge watching right now.
Let's see. I just finished The Sopranos.
Okay.
And Hacks. I loved Hacks. That is a great, great show. I really loved that show too. So those are mine. But we might start up on Gilmore Girls again.
I'm doing it.
Yeah.
It's first time. I'm loving it.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready to do a reenactment scene?
Okay.
Did you know that you were going to be asked to do this?
I did not know. I did not know.
You want to just wing it? You just want to go for it?
Yeah, sure. All right, let's just do this. Right. Cold read. Yeah.
All right. So, what are your plans tonight?
I'm going over to my friend Lane's house.
Sounds good.
And you guys are?
Dinner, movie, the usual.
Right.
This is a little uncomfortable.
Yes, it is.
But the thing is, if things go well, the way I hope things they're going, we might do this again.
Sit uncomfortably?
seeing each other outside of school.
That's okay. I'm fine with this whole you and my mom thing.
Well, good. I'm glad.
Well, better go.
It's good to talk to you, Rory.
You too, Mr. Medina.
Why don't you call me Max just when we're out of school?
I don't think I can do that.
Why not?
It just sounds wrong. Disrespectful. I mean, you're my teacher, Mr. Medina, and if I start to think of you as Max, even as a part-time Max, it just seems like it would get too confusing.
How about then we come up with non-Chilton names for each other? When we're not in school, I'll call you Rebecca.
Rebecca.
And you'll call me?
Norman.
Norman?
Well,
I look like a Norman to you?
I'm sorry. Psycho was on earlier and it was just the first name that came to mind. I'll think of something else. How about Alfred?
You know what? Norman's fine.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. I love it. I'll make a legal change.
Okay. Well, I better go.
Okay. I hope you and Lane have a good time.
Thanks. Would you give this to my mom for me?
Absolutely.
Thanks. Oh, and Norman, have her home by 10.
I thought that was excellent.
That's a cute line. That's a cute line there by the end. I like that.
It is.
Yeah.
And I think that's it.
Yeah. But oh my gosh, this has been so fun. Mara, I mean,
what a great guest. You're fun to talk
thank
to.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you for your time. I'm gonna get your books and I'm gonna read your books.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm very interested in your perspective on things. And you were a very interesting guest, so thank you for coming on.
Thank you. I think I even referenced Gilmore Girls a couple times in my book.
Really? Really?
Yeah. I think I did. I know I did at least once.
Well, good. You should.
All right, thanks again. Yeah.
It was a delight meeting you.
And thanks, good luck with everything,
and I hope you come back on.
I would love to. Oh, please have me back on. I would absolutely love that.
I think we're already sort of, you know, kind of texting back and forth. We're going to have her back on.
Yeah. Yeah. Please do. Please do. And And in the meantime, I think my sister and maybe my brother on the other side of the country and I will start watching again because we love it. We really do.
I know. I'm having a great time watching. I've never seen it. I saw the pilot and I saw Winter at the premiere and I've never seen the episodes.
People never believe that actors do that. But I know when I was a screen actor, like it was so hard for me to watch myself.
Yeah, I can't do it.
I got so insecure. Yeah. But and I can do it when I'm doing like animation because I'm not looking at myself and I'm not judging the face that I made. But it's hard to watch yourself.
It's tough.
But this is such a great show.
I don't mind it 21 years later. I'm far enough away from it now where I can actually enjoy it.
I feel that too. I definitely feel that too. I feel that when I look back on.
Can you watch Mrs. Doubtfire now? Because the whole time, all I've been wanting to say is, we're his goddamn kids too.
I can now, but I used to be the only time that I ever, I think, voluntarily watched Mrs. Doubtfire when I was a kid was it was on TV and I had the flu. And that was the only time that I wasn't like being like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have made that face. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have. It was the only time I wasn't obsessing. I watched it and I had the flu and I was like, this movie's fun to watch. I wasn't that bad. Yeah. 103 degree fever. Right, yeah. Right, right. So I totally get it. So lovely to meet you, Scott.
Good
so
meeting
lovely to talk
you
to
as
you.
Well. Yes, I really enjoyed this and we'll hopefully talk right. soon.
Yes. Yes. Okay. All right.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. Thanks so much to all of you.
Okay.
Have a good day. Bye.
Summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices, and vacation disappears quicker than ice cream melts. But what if summer doesn't have to come with a scorching price tag? What if there's another way? With IKEA, your plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Dreamy getaways can mean the perfect reading nook right outside your window, picnic in the shade, or taking your morning coffee to meet the morning sun. Really, any meal tastes better outside. Create that summer escape for family and friends and start planning a better, more affordable summer right now. You can be the host with the most and the least worries. This summer, make your doorstep the perfect vacation destination with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right. She was great.
She's so smart.
She's so
I like
smart.
Her. I love her and Mrs. Doubtfire. I love Mrs. Doubtfire.
She's so like, I just want to keep listening to her talk.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know.
She's smart. She's smarter than the three of us. That's for sure. Not you, Scott. Just the three of us. So Danielle spotted the clown pillow. I did not see it, but Danielle said she saw it.
And I'll tell you the exact time code. It was at 13:55.
You nailed it down to the second.
Yep,
what was,
right.
What scene? What was happening?
It's when Max came over for the date.
Yeah.
And he's talking to Rory. The scene that we just reenacted, the clown pillow was literally right behind Max
Medina. Wait a minute. You should get all of the time codes for all of the clown pillow appearances and see if there's some kind of pattern.
Oh,
we could start something right now and here. Well, we could start something when you get the info.
You know, I actually texted Riley the last time code of the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
So give me 1 second. Let me see.
It's also 13 minutes. That would be creepy clown pillow.
13:55. There's a weird, maybe magical configuration about this. Maybe we could glean some secrets from the creators of the show.
Maybe we have to add up all the numbers and it comes to something.
We're going to go crazy trying to figure it out. It's like a Rubik's Cube. We got to figure it out now. Mind's on fire.
I think there's no connection. It's just totally random.
But you don't
random.
Know until we get the numbers. We got to get the numbers and I got to sit down
like
late at night in my office.
Seasons.
And how many times?
We have 7 seasons to look for that clown pillow.
We don't have to do it today or next week, but we got to get all the time codes on when the clown pillows appear because there's something to this. I'm telling you, there's a secret that we could uncover that could be the whole clue to this thing.
Moving forward, I will make sure to jot down every time code of the clown pillow.
Oh, good. More work. Yay.
Was there anything we missed in this episode? I feel like you and Mara covered pretty much everything.
Ooh, there was one big one.
What?
Suki and Jackson.
Oh, yes! Yeah. The love connection.
Yes.
That was a funny scene.
Yes.
Wasn't
they were going to start dating.
Wasn't that a great reaction on him? And then his slow walk away after he agrees to it. That was brilliant. That was great.
Yeah, I love them together.
Yeah.
I love them together.
Oh, yeah. And was she doing Ricky Martin?
That was hysterical.
That was so
good. Oh, hysterical. Just with her little movements, with her hands. Oh, God. That she is one of the best physical comedians I've ever seen. I mean, just unbelievable. How can she make you laugh with a couple of different hand movements and a voice inflection. It's amazing. I think we pretty much covered the big moments.
Yeah, I do like that we're seeing sort of some change in Paris and Rory's relationship, but that was so harsh when Paris starts whispering it in the lunchroom and you hear it and you feel it just like going across the tables and you're just like, oh,
that was like
God.
A wave coming at you, like a tidal wave coming at you.
Yeah, I would say this is like the episode that you're kind of like, oh, I get why Paris is super mean, you know, like you get it.
But what's interesting to me about Paris is she knew she was facing a stronger person in Rory, who was trying to make friends with her and offer her friendship if you ever want to talk. And yet Paris continued to be mean and nasty. And I know it's going to take a while for her to break that down if she ever does. But it's like it's kind of beyond. It's like,
yeah.
When do you stop blaming the mommy's divorce and then start realizing that this is a truly disturbed individual?
Totally. Wait, fun fact, that Paris's mother is played by Anne Gillespie, who is also Kelly Taylor, Jenny Garth's mom, on Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep. Got that fun fact for you, leading that's us a, into maybe that's a pop fun culture. Fact.
But I mean, truly, you know, it's a real balancing act for Paris, because she starts to soften, you start to understand her, your heart goes out to her a little bit, and then yet she comes back with the nastiness, and you're like, wow, okay, maybe it's not the parents 100%. Maybe they're divorcing because they want to get away from her.
I don't want to say the word that sometimes comes to mind.
What?
With Paris.
What?
Starts with a B.
Oh, she's just, no.
Beautiful.
Beautiful child. Beautiful child. There you go. That's it, Riley. Riley knows, right?
What do we got, Riley?
What do we got?
All right. I'm Riley, and this is your pop culture for the episode. So first we have Rory. I'm Nancy Kerrigan, Lorelai says, and I'm Tanya Harding. I'm going to do the whole shoelace coming untied, nervous breakdown, let me start again, act and everything. Nancy Kerrigan is a former figure skater and actress who won a bronze medal at the 1999 World Championship and the 1992 Winter Olympics. Nancy was attacked in 1994 by Shane Stant, who was allegedly hired by her rival skater Tanya Harding's ex-husband. She has a movie about her called I, Tanya, played by Margot Robbie.
Remember the famous or the infamous Nancy Kerrigan video post knee bashing? Why?
Whole thing was just a hot mess.
What a mess. In figure skating. Wow.
It was a hot, hot mess. Wow. The whole thing. Oh.
Louise, dumb girls crave smart men. It's the whole Marilyn Monroe, Arthur Miller syndrome. So we've actually talked about this on the podcast before. Marilyn Monroe married Arthur Miller on June 29th, 1956. The two were known to having a short-lived relationship, and people saw their marriage as a mismatch. Marilyn was a sex symbol, and Arthur was an aloof intellectual who had thick glasses and unfortunately lost his hair.
I finally had to Google him to see what he looked like, because we've talked about him so much.
Yes.
He's not unattractive.
He was a large, balding, commanding genius. A man of letters, and they both had something that they wanted from each other. He wanted her because it was, I guess, you know, she was actually a remarkably talented person. She was very good with comedy. She was a really accomplished actress. And I think he recognized it. I mean, she left Hollywood to move to New York to get involved with Lee Strasberg in the Actors Studio, and that's where they met.
And there's something kind of cute about him, up a picture. Yeah, he's kind of cute.
Yeah. And I think she was underestimated by the studios, and you know, she really wanted to be taken seriously as an actress. And I don't, was she nominated for anything? Did she ever win any Oscars or not? Was she ever nominated? She was in a movie called, I think, Giant. Was that James Dean? And maybe it was Clark Gable and Marilyn Monroe. I forget the name of the movie, but I mean, really a very, very skilled and very intuitive actress. She really was. She could do anything. So I think, you know, obviously he was the leading intellectual in theater circles in New York at that time, revered playwright. I mean, he was Arthur Miller, for God's sake. And novelist. Wasn't he? No, he was a novelist as well.
Death of a Salesman. That's no...
Yeah.
That's nothing to scoff at.
No, it's not. It's nothing to sneeze your nose at. You know? My God. So, yeah.
Riley, what came next?
Rory says, well, it's not the Rick James incident, but Hugh Grant should be feeling pretty good about himself.
Two good ones. Nailed it.
So Rick James is an American singer, songwriter, and record producer. His real name is James Ambrose Johnson Jr. He started singing on the streets of Buffalo, New York at a young age, and James was arrested on charges of holding a 24-year-old female hostage for up to 6 days. Yikes. But Hugh Grant is an award-winning English actor known for roles in films, television series, and more. He studied English at Oxford University before pursuing acting. Hugh Grant was caught with a lady of the evening named Divine Brown. And the incident got even more notoriety when Hugh went on to The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and said, "What the hell were you thinking?"
Yeah, that was a real coup for Jay Leno.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the most famous films include About a Boy, Notting Hill, Love Actually, and Four Weddings and a Funeral. And he was known for his nonchalant touch of sarcasm.
What was that show I just watched where I was certain Hugh Grant didn't do it, but he did it?
It was a Guy Ritchie movie.
No, this was the HBO show that was just on. Undoing. The Undoing. You've got to watch The Undoing.
He was in a Guy Ritchie movie, a wildly different character than he's ever
played. Yeah.
Barely even recognized him.
I just ruined the ending of The Undoing. So.
Thank you. Well, now I don't need to see it, so he saved me time.
You're good. You're good.
Lorelai says, like a normal hello, not a like a here's Johnny kind of hello. So this catchphrase was made famous by Jack Nicholson in the 1980 film The Shining. Jack Nicholson shouted, "Here's Johnny," at the burst through a bathroom door with a fireman's axe. This scene is known to be the most frightening scene in movie history, and the crew used 60 doors while filming this scene.
Yeah, but where did Jack? It's referring to Ed McMahon and the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. You know that, right?
Oh my God, there's two Here's Johnny's.
That's the original one. Here's Johnny.
That's right. Riley, what's the context of it?
Yeah, that's Doc Severinsen and his orchestra that I was imitating.
Right, which one were they referring to?
Well,
what's the context of the quote?
I think you're right, Riley. I think it was maybe the Jack Nicholson one, but the original is Ed McMahon. But go ahead.
Yeah, wait, read us the context so we can.
Yeah, read us the context.
Well, Lorelai's quote is like a normal hello, not like a here's Johnny kind of hello.
So I think Scott's right.
I think it's Ed McMahon.
I think Scott's right. And we're not mad at you, Riley, for this because
We're
not mad at you.
You did
but
good.
I think Scott is right that it's not a normal hello.
No.
It's a here's Johnny.
Yeah, he'd drag it out. Yeah. That guy
was paid. Can we hear Riley say it one more
time? He was paid millions of dollars per year to say, here's Johnny. Best sidekick in the history of television.
Yeah, Riley, you do it.
Well, do you best Jack Nicholson?
No. That was mannequin crazy. Do the Ed McMahon.
Here's Johnny.
Not bad.
The other one's done.
Like, here's Johnny. Right? Oh my God.
Okay, moving on.
Lorelai says, wow, you're the new Heather. Heathers is a 1989 comedy teen film. The film portrays four teenage girls, three of whom are named Heather. Famous actors in the film include Shannon Doherty, Winona Ryder, and Christian Slater. They brought the Heathers back in 2018.
Yeah, it didn't work, the reboot. But that's okay because the OG Heathers was solid.
Rory says, Felix, referring to the Odd Couple. Felix is the main character portrayed by Tony Randall in the American sitcom TV series The Odd Couple. Felix had PTSD from his time as the Navy SEAL. The character is known to be a neurotic, obsessive-compulsive nut. In 2015, The Odd Couple was created as a reboot with Matthew Perry as Oscar and Thomas Lennon as Felix.
Based on the original play,
yes.
Broadway smash hit that Neil Simon wrote, and there was nobody, you know, Neil Simon is, all comedy writers, even working today, worship at the altar of Neil Simon. There was nobody that wrote wittier, funnier, more heartbreaking dialogue than Neil Simon, the king of comedy writers.
Good knowledge, Scott.
I performed him in New York. I studied him. He's Neil Simon, I think he wrote The Out-of-Towners, too, that film, that wonderfully, hysterically funny film with Jack Lemmon. And, I mean, Neil Simon, Plaza Suite, all these great, great old movies with Walter Matthau. Oh, my God. Doesn't get better than Neil Simon.
Doesn't get better. Lorelai says, look, I know it was bad, but this was a vicious hamster. This was like Damien Hamster. So Damien is referring to The Omen, a 1976 horror film starring Gregory Peck. There are many incarnations of The Omen. The film's title was changed twice. It was first called The Antichrist and then The Birthmark. They thought production was cursed because of the spooky events that would happen while filming, like plane accidents and dog attacks.
You know what? They stole that stuff from The Exorcist, which had real issues during and after filming, you know. I'm an Exorcist guy, right? Damien came after Exorcist, so I grew up. My first real movie scare was my mother allowed me to go see The Exorcist by myself with my friends in an afternoon matinee, and we were green. Brutal. We turned green. We were so scared.
So I was of the Poltergeist Friday the 13th era, but the one that really got me sideways recently, not that recently, but like to the point where I couldn't breathe and almost had to leave the theater was Saw. Oh my God. The original Saw.
Oh, the original.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, The Exorcist was messed up on her head spinning.
Yeah, but a great film because it was a structured, the reason it was so effective is because The Exorcist was based on a relationship between a mother and a daughter and a mother losing her daughter to the devil. And that was heartbreaking and it was scary to watch. So Ellen Burstyn had this, you know, real bravura performance in that, watching her daughter turn into a someone possessed. What a horrifying film. My God. Anyway, it was grounded in mommy-daughter love. It was kind of like Gilmore Girls.
Scared the crap out of me.
But different.
So our next one was actually referred to in our scene reenactment. I'm sorry, Psycho was on earlier, and it was just the first name that came to mind. So Psycho is a 1960 psychological horror thriller film directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Alfred financed the film himself since Paramount was not into the project. There was an iconic shower scene with Janet Leigh, and Psycho was remade in 1998, shot for shot. It was also Freddie Highmore played Norman Bates in the TV show Bates Motel, and this was a prequel to Psycho.
Yeah. The original extraordinary black.
I love them all. I love Bates Motel. I didn't even mind the Vince Vaughn remake. I love it all.
Aye.
I love it on the Universal Backlot tour. I'm totally.
Oh, it's so good. So good. Yeah. The guy runs after you with like a fake knife when you're on the tram. Yeah, for Bates Motel. And it's always so scary. And you're like, I know he's not going to actually stab me, but you still freak out.
Love it all. I love it.
So the title of our episode, Paris is Burning, is also a pop culture reference. So Paris is Burning is a 1990 American documentary film based on the drag ball culture in New York City. The film documents the origins of voguing, a dance inspired by model poses inside the covers of Vogue magazine.
Can we play our game before we do our favorite lines? Because I've been pretty pumped about this game the whole show. Because I feel like I might win. I have a chance.
What's the game?
Don't even warn Scott. Let's just do it.
Oh, I know what you're going to do. Alphabet dog names, whatever. Yeah, okay, got it.
No, not dog names, alphabet diseases.
I thought it was dog breeds.
They were doing, Riley wants to do dog breeds because she like wants us to have unicorns and rainbows, but we need to do what was on Gilmore, which was diseases.
Disease, all right, so we'll do diseases.
I am ready for diseases.
Let's go.
I think it'll go me, Scott, Danielle, Riley, and back around. Arthritis.
Arrhythmia.
No, you have to do B. You have to do B. That's the start with B.
Am I going to tank now?
We'll give you one more try. Arthritis.
Bronchitis.
Good.
Crohn's.
Dementia.
E. Oh, God. Oh, no.
What? How much time you get? You can't. You
done.
Can't.
Give me one more second.
Done.
No, it goes to me. I'm out. Okay. Goes to me. Endometriosis.
G.
F.
No, F, oh, dude. You don't even know the alphabet.
Sorry. I was prepping G.
Stop stalling. Stop buying time.
You're out.
Okay. Is it on me now or Riley?
No, Riley.
IBS.
What?
No, F, dude. It has to start with F.
I thought Daniel just did F.
She didn't get anything. You got to do it now. You inherited F.
F's a hard one.
A fever, dude. Say
that's
fever.
Not that's a disease. And what are you doing helping
rash.
Her out?
A fever rash.
Fibromyalgia.
Oh, nice. Good save.
Wow. G, Scott.
Gastritis.
H, Riley.
No, it's on. No, what do you mean, Riley?
We got out.
Oh, you're out. Okay, so this is a championship.
Can I pinch it for Riley?
No.
Hunt's disease.
What's it? What did you say?
Hunt's.
What?
Hunt's disease.
I think it's called Huntington's.
It's not Hunt's disease. I'm the winner. I'm the champion. You cannot get it away with Hunt's disease.
I'm looking it up right now.
I think it's Huntington's. Huntington. Great game, though.
Not bad.
I got my favorite line ready, though. Normally, I would do a funny line, but in this one, this is more emotional, and I'm going to try and deliver it well. Do you have any idea how many people you've hurt? Forget me and my mother. But what about Mr. Medina? He likes you, Paris. He compliments you. He holds your papers up for everyone to see. And then you turn around and do something like this to him. What is wrong with you? Forget it. I wouldn't expect you to understand.
So good. Mm-hmm. Mine's also from Rory. Well, I'd take some dance lessons because the way you express yourself needs a little work.
Oh, that was mine. You took mine. Yeah. Riley.
Mine is from your favorite character of all time, Max.
Yes.
And so Lorelai is describing her past men in her life. And he says, oh, so you have a thing for pirates.
Yeah. I guess I have to do a new line now since Danielle took my line. I think it's got to be Rory had some great moments on the stairs in the argument with her mother. What did she say about... help me out here.
I don't know, but I have one other sidebar one.
Go
when
ahead.
Emily says, kissing a teacher in a classroom on Parents' Day. And Lorelai says, well, they wanted us to get more involved in school.
Yep. That's a good one.
Okay, Scott, we have a little bit of exciting news for you.
Tell me. Oh, my God.
And all I'm going to say is one word.
What?
Rune.
Max Perlick. Oh, man, the guy's genius. He's funny. He's funny. He was great on set. That guy.
Oh, I can't wait. Oh,
oh
good.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, Rune.
Yes.
How many episodes?
Best.
He did a couple episodes, didn't he? Just,
yeah, I think three. I
he
think
did three.
Three?
Mm-hmm. Max.
Yeah.
That's a Max. That's
so
a
everybody
Max
watch
Perlick.
Double Date. Watch Double Date.
Will do. Okay, everybody, that's it for... Paris is burning. Thanks, everybody. This is Scott Patterson, and this is the I Am All In podcast, iHeartRadio. We will see you soon. Bye. Don't forget, follow us on Instagram at I Am All In Podcast and email us at gilmore@iheartradio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, scottyp.com, scottyp.com, scottyp.com. Grade one specialty coffee.
Ah, summer. The best time of the year usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there was another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. At IKEA, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, they have all of the essentials that you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com, that's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.